Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast, which means it's time for us to relax, ease our way into the weekend by learning something new. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And at night recently, after we've tucked the kiddos into bed, even though we tuck them in, they still manage to find a way to sneak out and delight us with their presence. Once they've finally conked out for sleep, the missus and I have enjoyed watching the old television show Monk. I say old television show. It's not that old. It's from the early 2000s. Like Columbo would be an old detective show. This is a not as old detective show, but it's going on almost 20 years. And it's a great show. It stars Tony Shalhoub as Adrian Monk. He is a detective with obsessive compulsive disorder and anxiety disorder. Makes it hard for him to interact with people, but he also allows him to notice minute clues at crime scenes and with suspects that other people miss. Ted Levine plays the gruff Captain Stottlemyre, and he's the other role he was famously known for is Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. So I always think of that when I see Stottlemyre in the show, and it cracks me up. And then Monk's former wife, who was murdered, that's her story, is kind of a long-running arc in the show, is played by the same actress who's Jan Levinson from The Office, which is hard for me to take her seriously. But it's a great show, and today's Free For All Friday is not about Monk. Maybe one day it will be about detective shows, but Monk gave me a springboard. I was watching an episode with Laura, and the plot was that Monk was waiting outside by the car, and he saw a member of a local crime gang murder somebody. And so Monk was placed in protective custody, you know, so that he could identify this person at trial, something like the witness protection program. So I thought it'd be fun today to talk about the real life witness protection program, how it works and dispelling myths about it, because I think it's just a fascinating thing you may have heard about, but you don't know everything that goes in with it. So before I continue, though, to that, I want to give a big shout out and thanks to our supporters at TrenthornPodcast.com. You guys are awesome. And as a special reward to you all, my dialogue with Brandon Robertson on whether homosexuality is sinful stretches over 3 episodes, by the way. The guy's written multiple books on the subject. So we had a rich, deep conversation. I think very edifying, helpful for you to see how to engage others on this issue, how to talk to Christians that think there's nothing wrong with homosexual behavior, even those who believe in the Bible. You're not going to want to miss it. So if you are a patron, a subscriber at TrenthornPodcast.com, it will be released for you guys on Monday. It'll go to everyone else's news feeds and general podcast feeds on Tuesday. If you want to get in on that and support the podcast so we can reach more people, be sure to check out TrenthornPodcast.com. Now, when I think of the Witness Protection Program, I also think of, I think it's a 1996 movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger called Eraser. And it's basically about Arnold Schwarzenegger helping, I think Vanessa Williams is the main woman, female protagonist. It's his job as a U.S. Marshal to protect her from these shady corporate guys who are involved in illegal arms sales and they're connected with the government. And so it's a wonderful mid-90s Arnold film. I definitely recommend it. I mean, there's late 80s, early 90s Arnold. I mean, some of my favorite Arnold movies, that could be a whole free-for-all Friday of its own. I mean, you go back to the earliest ones like Conan the Barbarian. You have to love that. But also Commando, Running Man. I mean, so many others that Total Recall. Can't forget Total Recall. Damn it, Cohagen, give these people the air. And then he's on Mars and he's running out of air and his eyes are bulging. He's like, I can't breathe. So Eraser is Arnie doing his best Arnold stuff to protect Vanessa Williams in witness protection. So I'm going to play a little bit of the trailer so you get an idea of it to ease you into what we will be talking about today. So here's the film's original trailer.
We told you there'd be risks.
You also told me I would be under complete protection the entire time.
Your Cyrex is selling weapons technology. This disc and your testimony will help us put them and their co-conspirators behind bars. You've done a great service for your country, Miss Cullen. Now it's time to think about your safety. He is Special Agent John Krueger.
You'll be handling your personal security.
We have a problem. The Cullen woman is still alive.
Get down!
His code name is Eraser.
You're in an extremely high-risk situation, Miss Cullen. That should have been explained to you.
The only way to give his witness a future is to erase her past.
Your new name is
is Deborah Elliott.
You know the signal.
911, I get out of the apartment.
I work alone. If anyone comes to you and claims that I've sent them, use this.
And then it goes, the trailer goes on with all the action scenes in the movie. A few things that pop out from it that I love. First, I miss movie trailer voice guy. Don't you miss him in these trailers? I mean, now the thing with trailers, they just do the Inception. It's like, you know, it shows a skyline. And then to undertone something serious is happening, you get the blah from Inception. So I miss, though, in a city where no one can be trusted, you can trust him. You can trust me. I'm here to protect you. So I'd love combining movie voice guy with Arnold. You got perfect Arnold lines in this movie, like, get down! Someone has to make a supercut online of Arnold Schwarzenegger saying get down in movies. Get down! Get in the chopper! Get down! Come on! I'm right here! Do it now! Come on! That can you guys catch where that one was from? Predator, another wonderful Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. So I love the Arnold lines, and I love movie trailer voice man, who makes everything dramatic in what he describes. So I miss that. But you get the idea here that this is, when we think of witness protection, we think of it in its most dramatic form like this, that someone's identity is erased, they're being protected from bad people who would be out to kill them. And that's essentially, though, the basis of witness protection. It's not something we've always had. It's a fairly recent development. It was founded in 1970 as part of a federal program, as part of the Organized Crime Control Act. So the act prohibits the creation, the Organized Crime Control Act was put forward to help federal law enforcement combat the mafia, combat the mob, racketeering, organized crime, which in the 70s, you know, some of them were very powerful in places like New York, Boston, and a lot of other cities. So in order to combat the mob, the act prohibits the creation or management of a gambling organization involving five or more people if it has been in business more than 30 days or accumulates $2,000 in gross revenue in a single day. So how does the mob work? You know, oh, this, we're just a poker game, folks. We're, you know, hey, guys, officers, we're just a poker game. Nothing suspicious going on here. And then, of course, in the back, they're laundering money and throwing the bodies into the van to weigh them down with weights to bury them, you know, put them in the harbor to sleep with the fishes. So the Organized Crime Control Act of 1970 prohibited these kind of gambling operations in the first place, so the mob wouldn't have fronts to operate out of. Gave the grand juries new powers, permitted detention of unmanageable witnesses to, in order to get evidence against the mob, against the mafia. And it gave the U.S. Attorney General authorization to protect witnesses, both state and federal, and their families. This last measure helped lead to the creation of witness security, the Witness Security Program, or WITSEC, which was developed by Gerald Schur, who was an attorney in charge of the Intelligence and Special Services Unit of the Organized Crime and Racketeering Section of the United States Department of Justice. So he was involved with these cases where he's trying to try mobsters and drug runners and weapons traffickers, very serious criminals. And the problem is you try to try these people and you've got witnesses who can testify against them. Usually they're other criminals within the criminal network. But then before you get to trial, the witnesses mysteriously disappear or they're just straight up murdered. So what do you do? So sure, along with the Department of Justice and the Attorney General, working with the government, founded the Witness Protection Program, or WITSEC, as it's called, which was later expanded with the Comprehensive Crime Control Act of 1984 to include other family members of witnesses who may be in danger because of their testimony. So WITSEC handles witnesses who are free to move about, even if they have a criminal record. The Federal Bureau of Prisons handles witness protection for incarcerated witnesses, because some people who are going to testify at trial, they're already incarcerated, they're in prison, and it's the job of the Federal Bureau of Prisons to protect them from being murdered by other inmates or guards that are paid off and things like that. But it's the U.S. Marshals who have the protective custody over witnesses in the Witness Protection Program. And to be involved in that, there's different entities that come together. One of them is the Department of Justice's Office of Enforcement Operations. They work with the Attorney General to decide if the danger of relocating this person, both of those who are involved in relocating them, and the fact that 95% of the people who are relocated in witness protection, 95% of them are criminals themselves. Usually they're people who've been involved in criminal ventures, and they've struck a plea deal, so they're not going to go to jail in exchange for their testimony. But you got to keep them alive till they can give their testimony at trial. So when you think of witness protection, like in TV, you know, Adrian Monk and Vanessa Williams in Eraser, it's usually just an innocent person caught up in this criminal adventure. No, most of the people who are witnesses to deep into these criminal enterprises, you know, testifying against the mob, they're people who are criminals themselves. Though what's interesting is that criminals in witness protection have a far lower recidivism rate, or a far lower rate of recommitting crimes, than people in the average public. So someone on parole has like a 40% chance of committing a crime again. In the witness protection program, they only have a 17% chance. So some still do, but the others know their life is in danger, so they got to count on these people. And in fact, Shore required people at the beginning of the program to sign a pledge saying, quote, they would be a good person and live a normal life. So the goal of witness protection is to take these individuals and their families and to provide them protection and keep them safe until they're able to testify at trial. And many times their protection is even extended after trial in order to prevent them from being retaliated against afterwards. So let's talk about some of the myths that are involved in the witness protection program. One is that when you relocate in the program, if you're relocated to another city or another state, nobody knows about your new life. There's only like three people who know about this. Don't worry, I work alone. If anyone comes saying they work with me, use this. That's not how it works in real life. Usually, the U.S. Marshals will inform local law enforcement saying that this person is under federal protection. They're a witness in a federal case. Witness protection is usually done for federal cases. Some states, like California, have their own witness protection programs for people who are testifying in cases involving the state attorney general, but the programs are not nearly as expansive as the federal witness protection program that involves the U.S. Marshals. So they will usually inform local police, let you know, hey, here's this individual, here's his criminal background. They're involved in testifying for us, so just to give them a heads up about that. And they may require the person, a relocated individual, to take drug and alcohol tests to make sure they're sober and they're not doing illegal drugs. So the marshals do is they are to provide the relocated witness and his or her family at least one reasonable job opportunity and subsistence payments. So if you until you can get a job, you're given money to get by and to live. But you're expected to get a job. They help you find housing. They provide you new documents and even counseling to get through this kind of ordeal. If you're lazy and you choose not to just get a job and rely on the subsistence payments, the FBI can cut you off. The marshals can cut you off and say, you know what, the payments are done. If you want, you can enroll in public assistance using your new identity, but you can't get the more generous assistance offered from us. And another way that relocated witnesses are helped to get these new jobs, obviously, is they're given identity papers. They're given papers to give them a new identity along with falsified employment background and credentials so they can be hired somewhere. FBI agent Bobby Chacone, speculating about this, says the FBI has businesses. It's called backstopping. It's a private business that's been in existence for many years. That's who provided me when I was undercover with my employment history and credit reports and stuff like that. I'm sure the U.S. Marshals have something similar for the witness protection program. So they can give you a fake resume. And, you know, if they call your resume to get references, there's going to be somebody at this fake company to answer the phone and provide them with these details so you can lead your new alias and your new life. One thing they won't fix, though, are things like your old grades. Some parents in the witness protection program have asked the marshals, could you give little Bobby, he got a D in algebra, but I think his new identity, he should get an A because he's now a math genius. They won't fix your old grades. There was actually a time, according to Shore's book, that there were people who requested plastic surgery not to blend in, but just to feel better and be able to get a job. And maybe they said to blend in also. And so there was some mobster who got the federal government to pay for his girlfriend or wife's plastic surgery, get a breast augmentation, a facelift. But now the government doesn't do that anymore. They won't. They'll help you steer you in those directions. They don't pay for plastic surgery for people in witness protection. Here's another myth. They're not just going to stick you in the middle of nowhere. So let's say you live in a big city, New York, Boston, Chicago. You're involved with organized crime there, and you need to testify against the other members of the mob, and you need to be put in a safe place. They're not going to send you to Timbuktu. They're not going to send you to just a tiny little town in the middle of nowhere in central, you know, in the central U.S. You would think that would be a good idea because the mob's never going to find you there. But here's the problem. It's not so much about the bad guys finding you. It's more about you revealing yourself to others and eventually making your way back to the bad guys. That's the problem. So if you live in a big city, they're not, if you live in Chicago or New York, they're not going to send you to a tiny little town in Midwest America. Maybe they'll send you to Los Angeles. They'll send you to Dallas. You know, America is huge. There's like 360 million people in the U.S. We have a large geographic area. You move somebody and no one knows where they went. You move them from one major city to another that's hundreds or thousands of miles away. The person's going to be relatively safe. And you don't want the person to reveal themselves. That's the big problem. You don't want to have a big fish out of water scenario. So if you live in a small town, you go to witness protection, you'll get sent to another small town. You live in a big city, you'll get sent to another big city. Also, Gerald Schur writes in his book about people making requests for where they would go. People say to him, he would ask them, where do you want to go for witness protection? So imagine the FBI asks you, so you're in witness protection, you can go anywhere. Where do you want to go? I'm sure as people are going to say, I'd really like to go to Honolulu. I'd really like to go to Aspen. I'd really like to go to San Diego, California. And they will not send you there. They purposely ask the question, where do you want to go, to make sure they don't send you there, because odds are you might have friends or family members or ties, and you're likely to give up your identity in those situations. So they'll ask you that and then purposely send you somewhere else, but not somewhere too unfamiliar. Like I said, big city to big city, small town to small town. They'll also ask you to pick a new name, and it's not going to be a completely random new name. In fact, Schur recommended that people pick names similar to their old names that have the same initials and the same first name. Because here's the problem. Adjusting to a new first name would be really difficult. People will call out your name and you're going to act like you're a deaf person. You can't hear them. They're going to say, what's wrong with this guy? I've been calling out for you. And you didn't respond. It's like in that episode with Monk. He goes into witness protection. He gets a new name and Natalie's assistant is calling him out. He says, oh, yes, sorry, I heard you. And of course, I recognize that name. It is my name, of course, acting all suspicious. So if you're in witness protection, if you want your new name, you should keep your first name and then choose another last name with the same initial. So, and also the other rule is you can't pick names that are ethnically nonsensical. So, I mean, now me, I'm kind of a mutt. People look at me, they say things like, so what exactly are you? And I usually say, I am not quite sure. I know I have like Scottish and Welsh and Jewish and Russian and Native American ancestry. So I can pick a lot of different ethnicities. If you look incredibly Anglo-Saxon, it may not be a great idea to pick a very ethnic sounding surname. It's something that would just give you away too much. So you pick the names, but there's a certain amount of latitude you're allowed to have. Another myth is that the most dangerous part of being in witness protection is the hiding. You know, when you're hiding out in your new identity and the bad guys you're going to testify against are just waiting around the corner or hiding behind a bush ready to get you. That's actually not the most dangerous part. The most dangerous part in witness protection is when you have to return to the trial to give your testimony, because at that point, the bad guys know who you are. They know you're coming. They know the date and the location of where you're going to be. And if they can take you out before you get on the stand, then you're not able to give your testimony. It's all for naught. So that's, Gerald Schur describes in his book how they would use things like patrol boats, like they would sneak people in on boats around in the harbor. They would often use decoys. At one point, they sent in in a famous mob case, they sent in an armored truck flanked by police vehicles running their sirens to make it seem like that's where the suspect was. And then they just snuck the guy in through a side door in the courthouse. And it was just one other person escorting him, not to attract attention. Another strategy we might call hiding in plain sight. And it's worth it. According to the Witness Protection Program, the Department of Justice, 10,000 criminals have been successfully prosecuted with WITSEC testimony. They claim that there is an 89% success rate that when a witness in witness protection testifies in a case, there's an 89% chance of a conviction in that case. And even more impressive is that in the history of the Witness Protection Program, in a program with nearly 20,000 witnesses, about 40% are the witnesses themselves, the other 60% are their family members. In a program that has provided security for 20,000 witnesses, not a single witness, a single person in witness protection has ever been killed while following the program's guidelines. So notice the caveat I put there. None of the 20,000 witnesses, no one who has been in the program, who has followed the guidelines of the program, has ever been killed. Every single witness has always been protected. They're good at what they do. The people who mess up are the witnesses themselves. And 9 times out of 10, the thing that they mess up is they violate one of the guidelines. Well, 9 to 10 times out of 10, it's when they violate a guideline. So, for example, you're told, they're very simple guidelines. Don't contact your old friends and associates and tell them where you are. Don't tell your friends. Don't tell your family. Don't tell people where you are. It shouldn't be that hard, right? Because even if you think they'll keep a secret, the mob might get to them, you know, and pry it out of them, literally, and then you've been given up. And here's the other big one. Do not return to where you used to live. There are simple rules. Now, the witness protection program does allow you to contact family members. You're not allowed to tell them where you are, but you can contact them, but they give you a secure phone line that can't be traced or intercepted. But you're not allowed to contact them on your own, and you can't return to the former location. If you do that, bad things can happen. For example, here's a case from the early 1970s with Daniel LaPaula. Daniel LaPaula was in witness protection, but against the rules, he decided to go home to attend a funeral. And you might think, oh, getting whacked at a funeral, that's a typical mobster thing. No, no, that is not what happened. You see, afterwards, he stopped by his house, his old house, to pick up something. And that's where things went wrong. Here's the New York Times article. I think it's October 7th. I think it's 1972. It's early 70s. Sterling, Connecticut. A witness murdered here before he could testify in a federal case involving a theft of army rifles, had taped conversations with two men accused in the case 3 weeks before he was killed. Records filed in the United States District Court in Hartford by federal prosecutors disclosed that Daniel LaPaula, 54 years old, the witness killed September 29th by a bomb blast at his rural home here, had concealed a body recording device to record said talks. So LaPaula went back to a funeral for an old friend, decided, well, I'm just going to stop by the house real fast and grab something in and out, and then I'll get back to witness protection and I should be fine. The problem was the people who were looking for him that wanted to kill him booby-trapped his house and rigged bombs in it. So when he went back to his old house to grab something, the bombs went off and then he was killed, which he would not have been if he had followed the protocols and guidelines for witness protection, which, as I've said, with 20,000 witnesses, has never resulted in a witness being killed. Though it's difficult. The program is voluntary, by the way. You don't have to be in the program if you don't want to be. But many people choose it because they fear for their lives and they want this protection. And there's, you know, an impeccable record of protection that the program has. But not everybody's happy about it. I think it's ABC News did a story about this, about children who were brought into witness protection and how their lives are going to turn upside down after it. This is a story about Jackie Taylor. Jackie Taylor's dad was a member of the Hell's Angels. So it's not just the mob, it's any kind of organized crime is usually involved. The Hell's Angels out of Cleveland was a very notorious motorcycle gang in the 70s. They were killing a lot of people. And so he testified against them in front of the Senate behind like this panel. He eventually went to jail for killing somebody, but he was in witness protection until he could give his testimony. And his family was kept in witness protection after that for their own safety. But Taylor goes on to say that it was not a good experience for her. And she thinks it's actually a very negative experience because of how it affected her identity and how to live her future life. So I'll play a little bit of that for you to see what it's like for her.
I had nobody to talk to. We were completely cut off from all of our family in Cleveland. Now I didn't have them. And I had this new life that I had to adjust to.
What was the lowest point for you?
Really not knowing who the heck I am. I was suicidal quite a few times.
After a difficult childhood, Jackie thinks she never should have been put in WITSEC to begin with.
I don't think children should be put on the program, period. I think that they should either be put with family or almost they'd be better off in foster care. I really do.
Individuals entering into the witness security program, their parents are in danger. The children are therefore in danger.
That's Michael Prout, head of the WITSEC program, who granted us a rare on-camera interview. While he could not confirm nor deny anyone's existence in WITSEC, he did say kids are better off in the program.
We are actually the heroes that come in the night and save them from that bad spot. There are opportunities which we afford in the witness security program that they would not get by growing up in a terrorist organization or mafia or a cartel. They have an opportunity to live.
I love that. we are the heroes of the night that come for them. I go, okay, Batman. But I mean, I see where Jackie Taylor's coming from, that your whole life is upended. And later on, the story talks about how she lost her WITSEC passport. She didn't have a birth certificate. Her, you know, you've just been erased. She didn't have a birth certificate. They don't give that to you for your new identity. She had a passport. She lost it. And it became almost impossible to get a new one issued because people said, well, you're not a citizen. You don't really exist. You've just been erased. Arnold, I'm about to finish. Arnold, I will get back to you in a second. Can you just give me a moment? No, play it now. Play the clip now. So I see both sides of the argument there, though I would err on the side that it was not witness protection that upended Jackie Taylor's life. It was her father for being involved in a criminal gang and taking part in various murders, that he's the one who did that to her. And her parents made the best judgment call they could to protect her safe from other retaliatory members in that gang. So I think that that's important to consider, though. I will end now with a moment of levity. You got to see the film Eraser. Oh, I don't. I'm going to give this away because it is a spoiler what happens. But you know what? You watch an Arnold movie, not for like the mystery of what's going to happen at the end. You want to see Arnold mess up the bad guys the whole way through, because I love the ending. And it has a great Arnold line that the bad guys get their comeuppance. Arnold, spoiler alert, just turn the podcast off if you don't want to know. But whatever. I'm going to end it with this. He has them parked in a limousine. They're murderers. They're going to get away with it. He has them parked in a limousine on a train track, and he calls them on the phone. You know, like, it's for you. And he says, you've just been erased. And then the train comes, and then the car explodes in dramatic fashion. And he goes down the hill a little bit and gets in the car with Vanessa Williams as witness. And she says, what happens? Everything okay? What happened? And then the movie ends with this Arnold line.
They called it train.
What happened? They caught the train. So I think I'm going to have to do a free-for-all Friday that is nothing but Arnold one-liners. So we'll keep that there. I hope you guys learned a lot. Just something else to add to your repertoire of knowledge with me. Thank you guys so much for your support of the Council of Trent podcast. And be sure to tune in next week for my three-part interview with Brandon Robertson, dialoguing about, is homosexual behavior sinful? You're not going to want to miss it. Check out TrenthornPodcast.com for more info. And I hope you all have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrenthornPodcast.com.